You better see the bulb, take it away.
This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong or mighty none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise anything in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a groundless heart, should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the divine abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not fallen into this world.
Alrighty. Hey kids, who's the Buddha? Don't know. So what are you doing here? Anyways, it's good to see everybody once again. Where's everybody?
Huh?
School holidays.
Is there like another class next door or something like that? That's what it's like. Never mind. It's always good to get together and learn a little bit about meditation. Any newbies? Oh, one. Okay. Two. Three. Anyways. So, your first time ever. Okay. Interesting. Okay, so anyways, meditation is something. Actually, I remember reading somewhere, especially for the kids, you know, if you meditate before an exam.
You get better grades.
I think I should have done that when I was younger. I would have passed high school. But anyways, meditation is, I don't know what people want to get out of the meditation practice. There's so many reasons why people come about this path of practice. Some of us maybe our doctors told us, or by word of mouth, maybe our friends that meditated a little bit and have gotten some benefits from it. And that's the truth also for monastics. We don't meditate because the Buddha tells us to meditate, and because we're good monks, we just do whatever he says. But instead we meditate because we see the benefits from this meditation practice. And today I was doing a little bit of meditation. Sort of, that's how I prepare my mind when I give a talk, is not to read the books, but to just sit and meditate to see where my mind goes. And it was actually nice and peaceful and quiet. And I come to understand that's the reason why a person meditates. We don't really meditate, or we can, or some of us do, meditate for like attaining the goals of Buddhism, enlightenment, psychic powers, the ability to see numbers in our meditation so we can go and buy lottery tickets. And then we will never come back here ever again. And actually one of the monks, he actually ordained because of that reason. He thought that, he'll become a monk, learn how to meditate deeply, and then he'd get to see the way the stock markets are working, and then he'll disrobe and go back out and play the stocks and become a millionaire. But that never happened. He's still a monk, and he is a very good monk. But the one thing that always sticks to me after many years is just the peace and the relaxation and the contentment that you get from this practice. That's all it is. Just being able to be content in the moment. Just being able to sit down and relax. Isn't that just a wonderful thing? Even though we may have so many things going on in our lives, and sometimes we may get into this idea that we have to escape the world. Go on a holiday to forget our problems. Have a divorce and that'll fix everything. Or maybe when our kids grow up we can have a little bit of peace of mind. But that's not the case. It's sort of like in this busyness of the world, we can actually find a little bit of calm and a little bit of stillness in our lives. And Ajahn Brahm always talks about the simile of the cup. So he talks about our lives, and he sort of holds up a cup, and this the water sort of like represents our mind. And so we're holding the cup, and then like we can never keep it still. Yeah. And when we come in to meditate, the idea is to learn how to develop a still, peaceful mind. And sometimes we think that just using effort or trying to force our mind, it will become still. But if you look carefully, the water never becomes still, because there's always a little bit of movement in our hands, tremors. So it's never still. It's sort of like our mind in this world. When we're using our mind, when we're doing things, whether it's working, talking to people, our mind is always moving. And sometimes this simile is taught, so it just makes the understanding of meditation, it puts it in a simpler way, an easier way to understand. So what does he do with the water? He drinks it. No, he doesn't drink it, does he? I'm thirsty, I might drink it. What he does, right, he puts the water down. He'll sit the water down. And then, if you look at the glass, the water, it just becomes still all by itself. That's all we've got to do, really, is to sit still. And our minds, if we do it properly, our minds will come to a place of stillness. Stillness, relaxation. Another thing that I like to talk about is the actual mind becoming more re-energized. Yeah, becomes brighter, becomes happier. And that comes about because we're not using up the energies of the mind. And it's quite simple. A great example is when Ajahn, when these meditation retreats are taught in Jhana Grove. People may go away for 5 or 6 or 7 days, and usually the first couple of days the teachers would say, just sleep as much as you want. It's like and the reason why you know, these meditation teachers, especially from Ajahn Brahm's tradition, advises people to just sleep for the first few days of the meditation retreat, is to be able to allow the mind to rest. Yeah? To rest. To re-energize. And to become a little bit more clearer due to all the clutter that has been accumulating over the weeks, over the months, over the years. And then on the third, fourth or fifth day, you know, the mind is rested, is relaxed, and then when it comes to meditating, the meditation becomes easy. There's this hindrance in the meditation practice called sloth and torpor, and a lot of times what will happen is people will just sit down and they go to sleep. You all understand that, right? You just close your eyes, and then within 5 minutes, oh, Santuti is so boring. I'm just going to go to sleep. So that's one of the hindrances that we are likely to encounter when we're meditating, and it stops us from seeing the potential of the mind. Like all these things, you know, they cloud the mind, and just behind those clouds, like on a cloudy day, there's like the beautiful sun that shines forth, and that sort of like represents our mind, the brightness, the clarity, the warmth that comes from our own minds. Each and every one of us, there is something special in there, but there are these clouds which block it. And you'll see these clouds come up in your meditation practice, and one of them is like sleepiness. Yeah. Another one is the thinking mind. So you sit down. I remember when I first started meditating, I was so enthusiastic. I was a young man or a teenager, I think 19 years old, and I was working as a just doing my apprenticeship as a chef. So you would work really late and really long hours, but because I wanted to learn how to meditate, I found out that there was this just this Vietnamese temple in East Perth. So every morning I would get up at 5, and I was like, oh, so tired. And I haven't discovered coffee back then, so I just got up. I think it was like during the winter. Put my windows down to let the cold air try to wake me up, and drive all the way to East Perth from Perth. So it was about, you know, 15 minutes, and just getting there and just meditating with the nun that was teaching me. One of the things that I noticed is that the mind is very active. And that's one thing that you'll notice as well. Seasoned or beginners, meditators, experience this from time to time. And the mind is active. Yeah, active, just moving around a lot, like a ping pong ball in our heads, bouncing around, or the monkey mind they would call it, jumping from one tree to another, and that's something that is to be expected when we learn how to meditate. And obviously there's this sort of like these meditation objects that we're taught as beginners, and one of them is to be able to place our minds or place our attention on the breathing or on the body, or you know, maybe on some sort of emotion, or even in the present moment, or the silence. And these are the things that help us bring our mind into the present moment. Like if we're watching the breath, our mind doesn't really go off into thinking because it's watching the breath. Our minds, I don't know if it's true or not, but our minds may not go to sleep because it's, nah, that's not true. If you're sleepy and you're trying to watch the breath, it's very difficult because the mind doesn't have enough energy, basically, to be able to watch the breath. So if you find yourself in that situation where the breathing is not there, and the mind is tired, there really isn't much you can do in a situation like that. So the one thing that gets talked about in Buddhism is to develop a sense of, you know, kindness or patience towards the process which is happening. And it's the path of patience. Pantene shampoo and conditioner. I said that before, ages ago. It won't happen overnight, but it will happen. And that will happen with the meditation practice when we're searching for peace and calm and stillness, coming here for the first time. It won't happen overnight, the attainment of peace and stillness, but it will happen if you just stick to it. And the idea of just allowing things to develop, yeah. This is this understanding that I think each and every meditator should take on board, is to understand that it is a process. It's very important in terms of Buddhism. It's like the gradual path. Just putting it into simple ways of teaching the meditators from Thailand. They sort of compare it to like growing a tree, a mango tree or a fig tree or whatever tree you want to grow. And there's a few things that you must do in order for the tree to grow successfully and to grow properly. But that's all you can do. You can't make the tree grow any faster. You can't slow it down. But you have to allow the natural process of that tree to grow by itself. And in the same way, when we look at this meditation practice, as meditators we get taught all these skills. We get taught to be kind towards the mind. We get taught to try to meditate by bringing our minds into the present moment. We get taught to do the breath meditation, and that's sort of like putting like the fertilizer on the tree. It's like putting the watering the tree. Sometimes if you're living up in the hills, you have to protect it from the kangaroos, so you put a tree guard around it, And sometimes you might have valuable plants that are worth $200-$300, so you have to protect them from the thieves. So there's all these sorts of things that you do to this, like the tree, or but you just leave it and you just allow the process to develop all by itself. And it's the same with this mind. It's a, and if you think about nature, the most like these beautiful trees that you see. I remember going to King's Park and they brought down a few Boab trees. And just so they're huge, majestic, beautiful trees to look at. And it's something that, you know, didn't grow overnight. It took time. It took years. It took hundreds of years. But eventually, it got to a point where you can just, you know, sit back and enjoy what nature has to show you. And in a sense, looking at our own minds, we have to allow the mind to develop in like stillness, in peace, and allow that to happen over time, many months, you know, many weeks, or even many years, and you can actually start to see, you know, the beauty within your own mind, and the benefits, and just having the ability to be able to just take time for yourself, maybe a few minutes every day, you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, find a quiet spot, and you just sit down and just be at peace with whatever you're going through. And that's such a wonderful feeling that we can experience, which is, you know, difficult to put into words. But each and every one of us, if we do experience peace or some sort of inner happiness, it's all the same. If you experienced it before, you can understand what I'm saying. But if you haven't experienced it before, then you wouldn't have a clue, and you may think it may be inconceivable or unattainable. But I think if you just give it time and allow it to settle, it's always like you know, like a kettle boiling with water, and that's sort of like the person who starts out to meditate. The mind is like hot, you know, hot, worked up, is bubbling over, is boiling. That's sort of like the mind. I don't want to put you off meditation, but the mind of a meditator who's just started. But then, or a meditator who's been meditating for a while. But then if you leave it, the water, allow it to cool down, sort of, the process of meditation, giving it time, allowing nature to take its course, that water will just get cooler and cooler and cooler and become still. And sort of like the same with our minds. We come in and it's hot. Hot with like greed, hot with like restlessness, hot with all these things that we're not having any, we don't find pleasant. But if we meditate and allow things to cool down over time, we start to have a cool mind. A cool mind is you know, a mind which is, you know, peaceful, a mind which is calm, a mind which is, you know, happy to be here, happy to be alive. That's what a cool mind is. And it's all, I always tell people, you know, it's just something that we just have to work towards. And I see a lot of familiar faces. One day you should be up here teaching. You've been here long enough. And yeah, just give it time and give it a chance. What I mean by giving it a chance, I'll see you here next week, see you here the week after, see you. And it's always nice, actually it's always nice to just to get together and be in a group, because everybody in their own way encourages each other to just sit quietly for half an hour and to just watch our own minds and learn from our own minds. And to me, the mind is, we have all the information there in our own minds. We just have to learn how to watch it and figure out what's going to be healthy for our minds or what's going to be unhealthy. And we're sort of like, you know, surgeons picking out the cancer or the disease or something like that. But we have to get the degree first before we can do that. And in the same way, we have to watch our mind and understand it before we can start working with it to develop more of a balanced mind. So you can just have a busy life, have times of trouble, people may call you names, people may cheat you, but because your mind is healthy, you bounce back quickly. And that's a nice thing. Sometimes we think, being a Buddhist, we escape everything. And that's not true. We don't escape anything. We live in a world. But I think what we do learn is, we learn how to recover from the tragedies, from the sicknesses, from the wrongdoings that people do to us, a lot quicker. It's sort of like having a healthy body is like having a healthy mind. If you have a healthy body, the body gets sick, but you recover quickly. And if you have a healthy mind, yeah, somebody may call you names. Some people may call you fat. I've been called fat many times. Some may call you short or too young to meditate.
Yeah, I've been called short.
Yeah, but because you have a healthy mind, you're sort of like, yeah, it hurts a little bit, but you can bounce back quickly and just carry on with life. Okay. Time for the serious stuff. So if I see you falling asleep, I'll say, boo. Wake up. Boo. How old are the kids? How old are the grandchildren?
How old are you? How old are you?
Very cute kids.
He does meditation at school after school.
I do no meditation.
You want to become a fighter?
Huh? You're on the iPad every day. Oh, that takes talent. Okay. So we'll just sit for about half an hour. Meditate, we close our eyes and we just get into a comfortable position. And meditation is not about holding a stiff posture. We can move if it gets uncomfortable. If we have like a sore back or we're putting too much pressure, on one of our knees or our shoulders needs a little bit of a movement to stretch it out, that's okay. You can do that. We're sitting down, not putting ourselves in a prison, but instead trying to find some freedom. And one way of doing that is to be kind towards ourselves, to be kind towards this body. So we just allow this body to relax and just be mindful of how the body feels. What we can do is we can use this body to anchor our minds in this present moment. If you can stay in the present moment, a lot of your worries and disturbances of the mind, they'll disappear, but they just fall into the background. Almost like a distant sound. You can hear it, but it's not disturbing. So use your body to learn how to be present. And you can start by just experiencing the sensations in our feet. It's always an easy one to put our minds on. The pressure, the hardness of the ground. What do our toes feel like? Just allow the mind to just be quiet. Now we can just take our awareness and surround that awareness with the quietness of the present moment. basic meaning of quietness is a lack of thinking. And just face it on your knees. And just see if there are any sensations in that area. And surround that feeling with the quietness of the present moment. And as we pause between the different body parts, just allow your mind to just sit quietly before it waits for the next instructions. Now you can take your awareness and just place it on the seat of your chair or the seat of your cushion and just feel the sensations that the weight of your body is making and just know it and allow it to help your mind center more in this moment, surrounding it with silence, with quietness. Now just take your awareness and just place it on your lower back and see what type of sensations you can know. Some of us have sore backs, tight backs, because we've been cursed. There's a lower back problem, like myself. But never mind, we can just use it as an object for meditation. And just remember to just surround the awareness with the quietness of your mind. take your awareness and run it up and down your spine. See what that feels like. Knowing that this exercise helps our mind stay in the present moment. Tension and tightness in the mid back or upper back. There's nothing we can really do about it, but instead just try to be as calm as possible. can take the attention and just place it on our shoulders. Seeing how it feels. And just allow the mind to just be peaceful, to be quiet, to just be. Now you can take and place your attention on your face. Just feel the coolness of the air conditioning system on your face. give your mind the opportunity to just meditate in whichever way it would like to. Take the opportunity to do the breath meditation if you wish to develop loving kindness, or just give yourself this opportunity to watch and observe your mind to see what you can learn. I think the greatest teacher we have is our own minds. So just sit back and just observe and watch. And now I'm gonna ring the meditation bell to end the session and just come out of the meditation at your own pace. It takes so long to turn on. It's like the hospital is using up so much power. So whatever's left just goes into these lights. Something like that. Who was here last week? I mean, which monk was here last week?
Oh,
this week.
I thought
there was
people.
Bodhi. Bodhi. Bodhi, oh yeah. Bodhi Dacha. Buddy Yana monks. Yeah. Are the nuns going to come down here to teach one day? Don't know, huh?
Yeah.
It's a bit of a long way, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it takes about, I think about an hour to drive here. Yeah. That's one of the reasons why you have so many monks come here to teach on a Tuesday night. It's because it's sort of like a training ground for them, so you get to hear all the bad talks at the beginning. And then over time they get better and better and better.
Yeah, but then they run away and start their own monasteries. You never see them again.
But it's kind of nice actually, because I think it is true, you know, giving public talks can be quite scary. So yeah, at the beginning, you're like, oh, what am I going to say next? I just keep quiet. But then it gets easier and easier and easier. But I remember, do you remember Ajahn Yana Tusada? Yeah, I remember him. I remember driving him here and he would give talks. And it would have, I remember one thing about his talks was there was like very long pauses in his talks. He sort of like didn't know what to say or ran out of things to say, or it was very peaceful. Yes, Bob. Question time. Oh yeah, question time.
Yeah, for the new people, perhaps you could elaborate a little more on those hindrances.
Who's new-ish? New-ish?
Three
new people here. Three.
One.
Oh, come on. I'm not here. Hindrances, oh. Having, no. Okay. So, what kind of problems did you guys have when you were meditating? Anybody just say anything random. Go on.
Thinking.
Thinking?
Talking.
Talking.
Oh, I was talking.
Sleeping? I heard somebody was sleeping.
Yeah,
somebody
was sleeping.
That's okay. That's a good
one. It's all right.
And then the other one is, oh yeah, hot and cold. The air comes hot and cold. And also another one is doubt. I think that's an interesting one, you know, doubt. Questioning whether this meditation actually works or not. And that's fair enough, because you can sort of see with your own mind whether the meditation is working or not. You know, you get the idea when people talk about it, is that, yeah, you get to learn these techniques which make your mind quiet and peaceful. All you're going to do is, you know, watch the breath go in and out, and then before you know it, you're meditating like the monks who live in the hills. But then you come across like stumbling blocks, and then it makes you question whether this actually works or not. So that's a lot of that's one of the hindrances that come up in the meditation practice, and that's the hindrance of doubt. That's why you see, like, in meditation groups like this, a lot of people come and go. They come, they try it out, they have doubts, and then those doubts turn into almost like a confirmation that the meditation practice doesn't work. So you never see them again. So so when the Buddha did talk about these hindrances, or talk about things like doubt, these are the things that basically stop people from, you know, meditating, getting deeper in their meditation, or continuing on with their meditation practice. And I think sometimes we get stuck with this idea where we sit down for like half an hour and we expect it to be quiet for the whole half an hour. And if we only get 29 minutes and 59 seconds of peace and quiet and 1 second of like distracting thought, then the meditation doesn't work. We quit, we're never going to come back, we're going to try something else. And one monk said, funnily, one time, he says, meditation is not working for me, maybe I should try medication.
I'll
take it. What? Don't worry. No, you take medication. Lollies, eh?
No.
Tim Tams.
No.
That's the best medication, you know. Don't reach for the Prozac. Go for the Tim Tams. So what was I talking about? Yeah, so this idea of doubt, and just like looking for perfection in our own minds causes a lot of doubt. And sometimes, oh yeah, we're talking to these monks and they should know what they're talking about, and if they're not giving us like clear enough instructions, or maybe just they're just talking because this is what the Buddha told them to teach, and it could be all made up, it may not be real. And sometimes when we think about that, we just give up on this beautiful practice of meditation. So in order to overcome this doubt that we may have in the meditation practice, we just have to learn how to be mindful. Like I said before, being able to watch and learn from our minds, and this ability to compare and analyze is a great tool that we can use. And just having moments of peace in our minds, just like little snippets, a moment here, and then blah 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 blah, a lot of thinking, sleepiness, and then a lot of doubt, but then it comes back to a little bit of peace, a little bit of stillness, and then it goes off again, and then it runs off to the left, and then it hides under the table, and then it goes for a drive to, I don't know, somewhere, but then it comes back. sometimes when we're sitting here meditating in Armadale, our minds are off in, you know, America or Thailand, planning our next trip. But we're not actually here. But But don't let that like turn you off. Don't let that create that doubt which stops you from, you know, continuing this path of practice. And what actually happens is when you start to see these little moments of peace, you start to recognize them, and it's sort of like you create this like internal GPS, and the GPS is sort of like, oh yeah, I want to go to you know, Mandra, and just type in Mandra and it takes you there. And then you want to go to, you know, Perth, you just type in Perth and it takes you there. And in the same way, after a while, there's this GPS in our head. We type in the word peace, and our minds, it takes us back to that peace. And it's sort of something that after a while we recognize and we start to understand, you know, what this stillness and quietness is, and we know that it's a place of it's a place that we like to be. It's a place that we like to hang out with. And in, you know, the way our minds look at things, we either like things or we dislike things. Yeah? We like certain types of food, we like certain types of people, we prefer certain types of, like, weather. And in the same way, our minds are like that as well. And how we relate to our mind is quite important. Because sometimes when we have, like, a moment of peace, when there's nothing going on in our minds, we dislike it. We think there's something wrong. And you'll notice that nothing's happening and I'm not liking it because I'm so used to, like, thinking about things. So in a sense, when we learn a little bit about the mind, we sort of change the way we think about what we see in our minds. So when we start to see like moments of quietness and moments of stillness, we can develop the changing of our ideas and perception. And instead of disliking when nothing is happening in our minds, we start to like it. We start to appreciate it, this quietness and this silence within our own minds. And that's the reason why, you know, people learn how to meditate, is to have this quietness and silence. But it's, at the same time, it's how we relate to it as well.
When I first started meditation, I used to think, what do I need to do?
Yeah.
How do I meditate? And it took me months to realise I don't need to actually do anything.
Yeah.
Just sit and be quiet and be still.
Yeah, just be quiet. Yeah, that's absolutely 100% right. And also, it's, you actually start to enjoy it. Funny enough, yeah, human, you know, it's like one monk said, you know, we're not human beings, but we're human doings. We're doing this and we're doing that, and we're not used to having a quiet and peaceful mind. But after a while, when you sit down and your mind starts to settle, you actually start to enjoy just being in the moment, just being quiet.
I sat here in my first night, Ajahn Brahm was in the chair. And he talked all about meditation, and I said, he hasn't told us how to meditate. And
yeah.
I thought, and I listened to the whole lot, and I didn't understand what I was supposed to be doing.
Yeah, yeah.
I kept thinking, what am I supposed to be doing? And that was the thing, you know, it took me ages to realise
yeah.
I wasn't supposed to be doing anything.
You're not supposed to be doing anything,
yeah.
You're supposed to be doing nothing.
Yeah.
And, like I was saying before, just, like, the peace that you experience, the stillness, that's how you overcome doubt. But the idea of doing nothing, it's a revelation. It's because sometimes we think, you know, the way we've been brought up in the West, or even in this world, we have to do things to achieve. Like, we have to go to school, get good grades so we can get a decent job, or, you know, if we want to find a partner in life, we have to be charming, we have to be good looking, we have to be a certain way. There's always something to do. always a standard that we have to live by, and always having a concern about what people think about us and things like that, all this judging and controlling and doing. But meditation is this path of just being able to sit down and just be like a tree in the forest. or you know, just like being a part of nature and just allowing things to be, allowing things to settle down. And that's one of the beautiful things about this way that we teach here, is this idea of just allowing things to just settle down, come to a sense of stillness. And with that stillness, that settling down of the mind, what we the benefits that we gain from it, the reason why we meditate, is this sense of contentment, this sense of peace, this sense of stillness. And that's all we really need to, I think, as meditators, that's all we really need to, if you want to aim for something, that's what you aim for. And then the deeper meditations, the wisdoms, you know, this all-encompassing loving kindness, that would all just arise by itself. You don't need to push for these special things to happen. In a sense, it comes to you. And I remember I was just like listening to Ajahn Brahm's talk when he was in the caves of Thailand, and he went into these caves to meditate. And he would say that every time he went looking for the stillness and looking for the peace, he never got it. He said that when he just sat still and just opened his mind and his experience to whatever was happening, that's when the stillness came in. That's when the meditation started to happen. So how much can you say about the path of meditation? There isn't really that much. And when you read the Buddha's teachings, he didn't sit up in front of people and spoke for hours and hours and hours. When you read the text, there's just a few things said, and he just repeated them, because I think he was trying to convey the simplicity of these teachings, and he just repeated them over and over again so people can remember them. Because in those times there was no internet, no books, and it was a oral tradition. So a lot of people, when they read the suttas, oh, it's kind of boring, because they'll say one thing and then say it again and then say it again, and then before you know it, the teaching's over. So yeah, the other point that I would like to bring across is that this is a very simple, organic path, and sometimes people think that it's just a path of meditation, but it's not. It's a path that involves everything that's happening in your life, and you could say when people do come across Buddhism, one of the reasons why they are intrigued by it is because of the promise of lessening one's suffering and developing more happiness. That's sort of like the Buddha's message to the world. And it's not only achieved by the practice of meditation, but it's also achieved by how we live our lives. That's sort of like equally important. And the saying goes, whatever you experience in your meditation, that's what you were doing before you meditated. And if you experience peace in your meditation, then you are doing something which caused that peace to arise within that meditation. So like the meditation and how we live life, it's a sort of like two dancers dancing together, and one cannot dance without the other, and if one dances beautifully, the other one dances beautifully as well. If the other one trips over and hurts himself, then the other one will also fall over and hurt themselves. So what we do outside of this, like meditation, is a huge contribution to the results that we're going to get. Any more questions, comments, complaints? Bedtime. No? Yeah, okay. Huh? Yeah, bedtime. Bedtime for the youngies, the oldies.
Sometimes now I can meditate in the beginning very easily.
Yeah.
I'm quiet on my mind.
Yeah.
But after some time now, again the big Pandora thinking comes.
Yeah, I think what happens is it's also our habitual way of our mind works, and yeah, we're just creatures of habit, and we like to think, we've been trained to think, so at the beginning we're motivated, things are just going smoothly, but then our old habits, they just come back. And this is a I think a trend that happens for a meditator, and it's something that you gradually work at, and I think over time, once you have more like control over your mind, you can steer it and direct it in certain directions. And also, it's sort of like the saying, you know, you have to, at the beginning of the meditation practice, you have to let go of control to be able to control your mind later on. And and what happens is that you start to see what is stopping you from going deeper, and then you tell yourself, this is my problem, and then you work at it, and then the next meditation you tell yourself again, and then the next one you tell yourself again. So what is actually happening is you're like reconditioning your mind, you're giving it instructions every time. So slowly over time it sort of starts to overcome this problem, because sometimes if you don't see it as a problem, then your mind will continue to indulge in it. Because yeah, we know that thinking is a problem, but do we want it to be a problem? There is a part of us who really wants to do it, who enjoys the thinking process. That's why it keeps on going on and on and on. But at the same time, it's kind of scary to let go completely of that thinking process, because we have a strong like identity to it. So then when the mind gets quiet, a lot of meditators, they freak out. Oh no, what's going on? So they start to pick up the thinking mind again, and that's understandable. But then you can start to see that this mind that thinks too much is sort of slowing the process down. But at the same time, there's no need to be too judgmental, because you can see the progress you've made over the years. And like I always tell people, is to always look back, because sometimes when we meditate, we look at the faults and we see, oh, how come we can't meditate like Ajahn Brahm? He's sitting there on cloud nine, flying first class every time he meditates. And we're just in economy class. We're back with the cargo. It's so unfair. But just look back further and see where you started from. And you come to understand that we've made some progress over the years. I think each and every one of us who actually come back has seen something in this practice, experienced some sort of peace to be able to momentarily overcome those doubts which stop people from continuing their meditation, and just having that experience sort of creates more peace, and no, more faith and more trust that this path does work. You know, you don't have to be monks. You can just be people with hair, different styles of clothes, and you're just doing the best you can. Yeah, even the monks, we're not perfect. We do the best we can. Some of us would like to go to Bunnings. Some of us don't like it at all. But anyways, there you go. Alright. Any more? That's it. Finish. Sleep time.
No. So in the beginning I can't sit 1 minute. Now I can sit at least 15 minutes.
Yeah. Just
thank you.
No worries.
Thank you very much for the talk and the meditation.